This podcast is brought to you by Aldis International, supplying your expert AI and digital transformation staffing needs across the U.S. and Europe. Today, you are listening to our AI in Action series, where leading minds in AI from across the world share their story, success, and advice. AI in Action cuts through the hype and explores the true impact of artificial intelligence in our world today.
You're listening to AI in Action. I'm your host, JP Valentine. Our guest today is Erwan Rivet. Erwan is the CTO at Octave Bioscience. Erwan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So Erwan, let's start with a brief background of yourself and your journey in technology, from where you got started, some of the roles you've held along the way, taking us up to today as the CTO of Octave.
Sure. So I actually got started early on in Silicon Valley. I have a Master of Science in Mechanical Engineering. And so when I started in Silicon Valley, I got my degree in France, but moved to Silicon Valley pretty early and started in hardware, actually, in more manufacturing operational type of positions. That was a logical place to be. And then as I moved on and as Silicon Valley evolved, it became more and more software oriented, more and more digital platform oriented. And so as you know, the first few years became from startup to bigger companies, I had the opportunity to work for Cisco as one of the big companies, as well as a little detour by Logitech, which was a great consumer electronics company to learn a lot about releasing products on a fast pace and getting everything done at a very high volume, right? You're selling mice or keyboards at millions of units, not a few hundreds when you're working in networking equipment. So great opportunities from both the small teams to the big teams of big companies. And at Cisco, I really enjoyed leading through a matrix system. So for a while, I didn't have direct reports. I just led teams across multiple units. And that was very interesting. And it was at the Cisco scale. So you can imagine releasing a firewall solution with a expected revenue of $1.5 billion the first year. Puts a lot of pressure, but also gives you a lot of opportunities to grow. It was challenging, but that helped me a lot understand more about leadership and how to lead people versus just managing a team. So that I really was almost a pivot for me in my career. And then I moved on to even more software. And a small startup doing software-defined networks. There was the team from Cisco that convinced me to join them after a few tries, and the company wasn't doing as well, but we did manage to get the first level of products out. The only thing that became obvious to me is I really started reflecting about I'm building great technology. It's a lot of fun. But at the same time, the customer base, type of products I'm building do not match as much my interest in my life, where I now had a family, a child with disabilities, and I really wanted to have more impact on what would my job do. And so when Honeywell came to me to hire me and actually relocate me to Switzerland, it was a great opportunity to build digital platform for smart buildings and smart homes. And that started looking at sustainability, looking at opportunities to build systems and products that help people live a better life was very interesting to me. And then as a family, it was great to bring our children back to Europe and get the experience to live in Switzerland. Again, another growth opportunity. So I took on the leadership of a team of 300 engineers. And after a while, as many big companies do, they start restructuring, they start having more focus on cost reduction than innovation. So I helped the company do that in some ways, and then figured out after a while it needed to change. And then restructuring after restructuring, I ended up with a team of 40 people. And then after that, the next wave was something I needed to leave the company for. So got the opportunity to say, hey, what if I started my own company? So I looked at building a capability around one of the technology I worked at Honeywell that the company was not interested in building up. So I started seeking investors, looking at building a business plan. But unfortunately, in Switzerland, living on savings is not the best solution. I found a great opportunity at EMD Serono. In Europe, it's called Merck KGaA. They were looking for a head of software engineering in the digital platform side and trying to build digital platforms around some of the drugs and some of the mobile apps they had for combination drug and tracking for patients. So another great opportunity. At the same time, I got accepted to executive MBA program. So I did mine at Trium. And that gave me a great opportunity to match both my technical background and my business passion of how do I make sure technology and the latest greatest is applied in a way that makes sense for business. I had too many conversations before where, but of course, that's the best solution. It's technically is going to work. And then the business people would say, yeah, but no. It was, for me, a great opportunity to match both and to be able to say, okay, yes, when we consider these technology decisions, they need to be rooted in business because ultimately that's what's going to benefit the company. So I built a team of 17 people there in Switzerland at EMD Serono. We were really starting to build very nice digital platforms. And I met Bill Hagstrom thinking I was meeting somebody for a partnership. And then we had talked with my family to move back to California. So it was a good timing when at the end of one of our conversation, Bill said, I have a CTO position open. Would you consider it? Mm-hmm. And opportunity just presents itself. Sometimes the universe has a plan sometimes for what you're doing. So after all these restructuring, all these activities, I had just finished my MBA program. It was the perfect timing. And then I started working at Octave Bioscience. I got the position as CTO. And again, with the same idea of building a digital platform to enable chronic disease management.
Great path. And thank you for sharing, particularly the inflection points at each career change and why and what you gained from it. It segues nicely into Octave. So before we jump into your role on the team, tell us about Octave. Who are Octave as a business? What problem are you trying to solve utilizing bioscience and then obviously AI, machine learning and data science as a part of that?
Octave is really, at a high level, decision medicine play. We're working on building a care management platform for neurodegenerative disease. So our first application is MS, but we're hopeful to we will reach out to other disease states. The idea here is to be able to collect data, understand that data, and transform it into actionable insights or actual stories that both patients, doctors, but also insurance and pharma companies can really leverage and either do a better job or do their job differently based on data, make decision based on data versus a lot of the type of decision making we see in this field. So three major areas we're addressing, and the company, the nice part is the company is really mission driven. We build our company around solving problems, pain points in the market. It's not so much a company that develop a technology and is trying to find a market for it, or a research organization that spins out their research into making an impact in the industry. So really focus on solving problems and pain points for all these stakeholders. One of the method we're using is building this multi-sided platform, so all the stakeholders benefit from it. And our idea is one big element of it is measuring protein biomarkers in the blood serum. So this has been done before in other areas, but we're not aware of anybody else who's done it for neurodegenerative disease and especially MS. So a big part of our company is rooted in blood testing and building a blood test and having a lab in our office here in Menlo Park. So we're really focusing on measuring about 21 different protein biomarkers in the blood. So this is the first blood test for MS in the world. Most of the time, the measures are done through either a spinal tap, CNS, or through imaging. Introducing a new way to measure the disease, especially disease activity. As we move forward, we'll be able also to look at disease progression and other aspects of, is the patient taking the right drug for their profile from a biology perspective. So that's one big element. We're collecting a lot of data around understanding those proteins, where they fit into the different pathways of the disease. And then the next layer is really the imaging layer. We're starting with brain MRIs. We're trying to really quantify those images. Right now, usually what we've seen is if we gave a brain MRI to a neuroradiologist in the morning and gave them the same brain MRI in the afternoon, you probably would get two different results. So where our hope is that the quantification will bring a little bit more consistency, a little bit more standardization of what are we seeing? Are there differences in volume over time? Are there differences in lesion counts, lesion volume, lesion shape over time? And how do we measure those so that a neuroradiologist or radiologist can do the best of their job and focus on making a report that makes sense, that is targeted to an MS patient or targeted to the MS disease? And that in turn helps the neurologist to make decisions and say, oh, yes, I do see, I understand what's going on. This patient is going through a flare of the disease, or maybe they're very stable. There's nothing really to be done, but it's confirmed through data and not so much somebody's opinion as it is done today. We already seen some results. We've done a lot of retrospective studies, but also some prospective analysis. And at this point, we're looking at about somewhere around 40% or 44% better findings or additional findings to the traditional way of seeing images. So already an impact, and we're really thrilled about our capabilities and how what we're building in that field as well, looking at 3D images of brains instead of just the 2D slices that is commonly used today. And then the third element that we put in place is really this idea of tech plus human is always better than tech alone or human alone. And so what we're doing is helping the patient track their medication and their symptoms, and then adding to that a human, I would say, a care partner, somebody who is a MS certified nurse who can really help that patient throughout their journey, and especially between those two neurologist visits, which in this domain tend to be every 6 months, every year. And so when the neurologist sees the patient, most of the time they're going to ask, what happened in the last 6 months? What happened in the last year? Really hard to do for a patient when, unless they have a log, and then it's hard to share with the doctor. So we built a mobile app for the patient to use when they inject themselves, when they take the medication. And we ask them a very simple question. Do you have any new or changing symptoms? If they don't, they're done. It's 15 seconds. It's not so much of engagement, patient engagement app. It's more of a tool for the patient to record data, knowing that their neurologist will use that data, will see that data. And on top of that, having this almost concierge service, that MS nurse always there, talking to them every 2 weeks, seeing their data entries and really following up with them, that enables a lot of great context perspective and understanding what's going on with the patients, but also capturing early any changes in the disease, whether it's a flare, what's called a relapse in MS. We actually have been able to detect early on some changes in patients using our app and the algorithm behind it, so that we get to a level where we can have an impact, where the neurologist who only sees these patients in limited time can at least understand what's going on and not spend so much time on collecting data, but more on what decisions need to be made, what care could be. So Three layers of data collection, three layers of complexity, I would say, because it's very diverse data. We built a technology platform using AWS. That's our backbone. And then a lot of our work has been done around data science. When I joined as a CTO, and my role is, I would say, leading both the data science team, but also the technology engineering team. When I first started, there was a lot of talk about how big of an engineering team are we going to build. And as I progressed, it became more and more obvious. We're collecting so much data, we need to make something out of it. This is more a data science problem than truly an engineering problem. A lot of technology enables you to do so many things without having to develop your own stuff.
You are listening to the Aldis Podcast. When you're looking to scale your team, or if you are interested in showcasing your company in a future episode, reach out today. Or if you're in the market for a new role, visit our website to view open positions, www.aldis.com.
Well, on that, and again, we appreciate you sharing the mission and the problem that Octave is trying to tackle. Mm-hmm. You talked about the complexity, you talked about three layers, but what also came through there was the potential impact that this can have. First of its kind, MS test, and then the advancement in medical imaging. But as you start talking about the complexity of the problem and the building of the team, that leads nicely into what would be my next question is, give us some insight into just how challenging that was for you and your group and how you've gone about scaling it and what the current team structure looks like now with the mix of data scientists, data engineers, and machine learning.
For us, definitely, we're very careful in who we hire. We have the privilege of being a company that is mission-driven. So a lot of people who join us really join us because they buy into that mission. It's not so much about, oh, another job or something I could do. One of the big feedback we got from our data scientists is that, you know, they chose us because they didn't want to improve ads, which are usually the big tech companies. Data science efforts are around those type of topics. So that's one of the things that helped us hire really high-level talent. We did structure our team into a data science versus data engineering, because I'm a believer that a lot of the data problems or data activities we have are really science-based. We need people who understand science, who can look at the data source and say, yes, this makes sense, or no, the way it's collected or the way the data is processed might generate a significant amount of error. So let's be careful how we analyze it. Let's be careful how we ingest it. And then ultimately, being able to harmonize that data requires a very scientific mind. And that's what we look for in our candidates for the data science team, is really science people first, and that those people have a passion for data. So interestingly enough, we have now 5 data scientists in place. We have people with PhDs, people who have been working in research for a while. We have an astrophysicist who did a postdoc at Stanford University. We have a physicist who's done dark matter studies in the national labs, all of them wanting to do something different, wanting to be more in the healthcare side, again, for that impact, for the impact you have on people living with a disease that is very challenging to live with. There's no cure for MS, right? So anything you do for these patients is going to have a major impact. There's about 1 million patients in the US. And, you know, ultimately, as disease progresses, it could mean some really severe disability. And so anything that helps them push out that deadline, I would say, is really impactful. And that makes a lot of our team members passionate about what they do, and seeing the impact on somebody's life is just remarkable. The other piece that we have is the other team is data engineering. So our investment on the engineering side first started with mostly outsourced resources, and then we started building our own capability in-house, mostly around application development and backend. But we also recognize the need for the data scientists to focus on science and maybe be less involved in engineering kind of the pipes, right? How do you make sure that the data flows correctly from the source all the way to the dashboards, all the way to the end product? It's a different mindset, right? You want to develop products, you want to develop services based on that data. And so somebody needs to be in there to make sure that the data flows correctly throughout the different steps. Our data scientists can develop algorithms, go from the basic automation or AI of data to the first level of analysis, to then building machine learning algorithms, to ultimately, as we move forward, maybe even look at deep learning through very diverse data sets. And then ultimately, as we build our graph modeling capability, also looking at how do I connect all this data from 3 different streams, basically, into a meaningful story or meaningful actionable insight. Is a signal in the blood matching a signal in the image? Is that matching a signal from a patient's symptom or from their wearables? That's something that we're working actively on. And both the scientist and the engineer have to work really closely to make sure that the data is ingested, harmonized, and ready for decision-making. Ultimately, our play, because it's a precision medicine play, becomes predictive at some point, and then that helps both the doctor to make the right decisions, but all the stakeholders to benefit from joining our platform.
Yeah, and you've given some insight into the future iterations of what Octave could work on in the form mm-hmm. of predictive treatment. But staying on the complex problem at hand, you touched on the collaboration between engineers and scientists, but that's also a good point to stay on, because I know you have separate teams, and that's one of the reasons why you're able to be so successful. Can you give us some insight into the day-to-day on both sides of the house, what a typical day in the life for a data scientist is, and then also how it looks on the data engineering side?
Yeah, so for our data scientists, mostly and more recently has been really working on understanding the data first. What is the source of data? Is that source, you know, correctly set up? What are we facing? For a good example is our blood biomarker, right? This is concentration of proteins in the blood serum coming out of our lab. It's, you know, structured in a way that we were able to do analysis. And then the data scientists really looking at multiple algorithms and trying to figure out which algorithm is the best to process and create a disease activity score. We have a team, actually now three of our data scientists are focused on that, to really look at the data, process it through an algorithm, and figure out how good, what is the performance of that algorithm, and then compare multiple different algorithms to each other and say, hey, yes, we're getting much better result with this. Does that mean, is this correct? That's where the scientific mindset comes in and says, wait, you know, I need to make sure I build the hypothesis correctly. And then I compare apples to apples and making sure that what we're seeing at the other end of, is this a true measure of disease activity? Does it correlate exactly to what a doctor would expect through existing measures? Most of the time, neurologists rely on existing tests, and we have some data on those tests and matching it to the blood biomarker. So that is a daily activity for data scientists, is really getting the data, understanding it, and then comparing different models. Do we have the right model? What is the model that is most performant? If I correlate this result to a specific data point in the clinical information we have, or in the radiology information set we have, does that match? Does it make sense? And how much, you know, can we process of those different samples that, you know, correctly set up? And then the data scientist might probably look at, I need a training set, I need a validation set, I need different split of my data to understand, am I seeing correctly? And you're dependent on, in this case, biology. So as much as you want to have a specific result, you also, this is a scientific endeavor in some way where the data will bring something that might not be expected. So that's the data scientist's work. From the data engineer work, it's more of, okay, where's the source of data? Is that data clean, dirty? Is there a significant amount of noise? What tools can I put in place to help the data scientist see the data in a way they can say, yes, this is exactly what we need? We learned by experience in this case with some of the claims data we worked on, 72 million claims. It took us a while to realize actually we were missing some of the data because it was a new data set for us, and it's not as straightforward as one would think. Even though it's coming from computer system, there's a lot of noise in that data. And then, you know, you start looking at this makes sense, and then the data engineer also looks at, okay, if I'm ingesting this data, what standard does it come in? Do I have a tool to manage that? Or do I need to build a tool that's going to enable me to check that the data is complete, the data is correct, and then how much needs to be denoised, that would be, or clean in some way. And then That data engineer also is going to look at what type of storage do I need for that data, what type of algorithms need to run on what type of software, on what type of services on our platform. And then looking down the road, a little bit further down the road, and saying, okay, we've done the analysis, we've got some really strong algorithms, we've got some really good machine learning capability here. How do I transform that into either a product or service? So the data engineer is going to have to work with more of the product leads, the marketing people in our company, to say, hey, what do you need to go in the market with? And how do I transform the output, I would say, of the data science team into an actual working product? It's one thing to say we found scientifically some results. It's another thing to say, well, that data flows now from the source all the way to a, you know, blood test report, for example. And what does the blood test report look like? And is that stream happening correctly? In the case of our MRI business, building the capability around getting the image, uploading it to the cloud, running quantification software, then building an app to QA and QC everything at multiple levels, tracking the files, getting all the way to presenting information to a neuroradiologist, and then helping the neuroradiologist write their report and get that report to the right place, usually in the hands of a neurologist in clinic. All those require computing systems, require services to be put in our platform, require a lot of work for our data engineers to both understand, okay, how do I integrate those machine learning algorithms or those models into something that makes sense ultimately for our end user.
You've given some great insight into the environment, both on the data science and data engineering side. So final question for me then, Erwin, you and I were speaking offline about this. Octave are actively growing and there's going to be continuous opportunities. So could you, final question would be, give us some insight into the types of people you're looking to bring in and where you expect the team to grow to over the next year.
Looking for people with diverse background. What we're doing in this domain, it's rare to find somebody can say, or I've done this for the last 10 years, right? But we're pushing the envelopes in so many different areas that sometimes what we're looking for in a profile is somebody with a different background, somebody that might not come with 20 years worth of MRI experience, for example, because that also could create some bias of, oh no, that's not possible. It's been attempted too many times and it's not going to work. We're more, technology has evolved so much that now we're able to do things that we probably couldn't do 5 or 10 years ago. So it's very important for us to get the right people who kind of the image of you want to be on the bus, but the destinations, the stops are less relevant to you. It's more about being part of the team. And that's what we built. There's a team that learns together. It's a team that buys into the mission. We really get a lot of positive feedback from the people who interview with us or even the people who joined us of saying, this is just an amazing environment. You get to learn from the best of whatever people's experience have been. And nobody comes in the company saying, I've done it before, right? Let's figure it out together. How does this work? Everybody's helping. My data scientist, I usually say I hire people more intelligent than I am so I can learn, but it's really true. They are amazing people, but they never brought any ego to the table. They're really looking at how do we solve this together? How do we bring the best of what we've done before and apply it to this domain? And that's really what we're looking for, is people who are open to collaborating. We're very collaborative, even externally, but also are able to say, hey, let's solve this together because I don't have the answer and nobody. And so that's the type of people we're looking for.
Excellent. Erwin, thank you so much for coming on today and talking to us, sharing your own background. What you're doing at Octave sounds incredible, very exciting, and it's something that can really have a huge impact on healthcare as a whole. So we wish you and your team the best of luck in the future.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your time as well.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Aldis Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and any Android podcast of choice. You can also head over to our website, www.aldis.com, to listen to more podcasts, view our open roles, and stay up to date with industry news. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for more great episodes coming very soon.